Hello and welcome to the Advanced Age Role Playing Heroes podcast. I'm Nathan, I'm your host. Matt could not make it for this one, so I'm flying solo today. I've got with me two special guests from Astrolab. They're creating an English version of the Arab Altor setting for Dragonbane. Guys, can you introduce yourselves? Leon, why don't you start with yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Nathan, and it's an absolute pleasure, you know, to have a chance to sort of talk to you and to your listeners, and I hope we can get into sort of Arab Altor and what it is, where it comes from, and what we're all about. So my name is Leonor. I am mainly involved sort of on the writing side, and then with me is also Emil, we're both in Astrolab. Emil, please.
My name is Emil Gradén, and I mainly are the in-house illustrator and kind of an art director for Astrolab and the Arab Altor project.
Great. And there's a couple other folks who couldn't join us for this. Can you let us know who they are and what they do, just so they get some credit?
Yeah, I mean, we're a gang of four, basically. So it's Emil, it's me, and Mons Broman, who's also involved on the writing side and does a lot of the sort of layout and graphics, including the map. And then you have Jonas Vie, he's the author of the Call of the Siren campaign, which is part of the Kickstarter, and which we're adapting from a previous game that we did before Arab Altor. And that's the thing that we'll also be releasing in both English and Swedish for this particular Kickstarter. So that's us, basically. So a gang of four at the moment.
All right, so I want to get into your origins in a second, but I want to let everybody know, like, where I first. I'm not Swedish, big surprise. But a few years ago, we interviewed Erik Granström when he was talking about the Forbidden Lands Blood March book that he wrote. And he was kind of giving some of his history, and he said that he brought up Arab Altor because we talked about Dragonbane a little bit, and said it was, you know, a setting that he worked on. It was a very early Dragonbane setting. So this is something that is kind of like maybe like a Faerun for D&D. This is like a Sweden's kind of first big setting, and you guys have brought it back to life. Can you give us some of the history about that?
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, unless, do you want
to? You can start.
Okay, I'll have a start, and then Emil can correct me.
Okay.
So that's a good setup. No, sure. I mean, I don't know if we're bringing it back to life. It went out of active production. I don't think it ever died. You know, it's quite a big deal, especially if you're a Swede of a certain generation. Going back to the very beginning, Dragonbane, Drakar og Demoner, as it's called in Swedish, back in the 80s, it was released really as a setting agnostic, like standalone role-playing game, much like Dungeons & Dragons in that sense. Mm-hmm. And it always was, as long as Arab Altor was around, Dragonbane was always being published. It was never published as an integrated part of the game line,
okay.
Which Trudong was, and there was another setting called Cronopia, which I'm sure people will be clamoring for before long as well. But Arab Altor was always sort of separate from the base game. It was always like an add-on. In that sense, it's a bit like Forgotten Realms, like Faerun, you know, it's sort of a default setting, but it's not a default setting per se. It's not an integrated setting. And I think the big difference is, I think the Arab Altor really evolved over time, a bit like a patchwork or a hodgepodge, and I think there's been a lot of criticism of the other Arab Altor that it was different bits and pieces that were sort of put together in a way that wasn't necessarily designed from the start. Everyone had their own little pet project, and I think one of the things that we tried to do, because I mean we think that patchworks can actually be quite beautiful, so we would try to sort of bring it all together in a way that's still a bit more cohesive, so you sort of it feels like the same world. Brings out the best bits and pieces, mm-hmm. And so has that melting pot quality, but without being sort of disjointed. But certainly one of the, so the first, the start was just a single article in the in-house magazine of Eventuspiel, the publishing house that was publishing Dragonbane, the first edition, or the first four or five editions, actually. Yeah. And it was just like one island in the Copper Sea, Caddo, which, you know, the backers will see on the map when we launched the Kickstarter, which had this sort of very specific take on sort of pantheism, and people worshipping the sun and the world soul, inspired by Chassidism, actually. And this is not Erik Granström, but Anders Blixt, who's the other sort of titan of Dragonbane and of early Dragonbane. But then Erik came in very early with The Brimstone Sleep, Svavelvinter, which was the start of this epic conflict suite, which, I mean, it's really the Masks of Nyarlathotep or Enemy Within of Swedish
Folk. Those huge campaigns that people...
It's the reference point. And it's really, it's because it's epic, but also because of the quality. Like, Erik really knows how to write and how to engage. So when we came back to Erebaltor, it was very much looking at those parts, a lot of undisplaced parts, and generally just looking at the setting and trying to see where is it something that you want to build on and that's inspiring and that you can sort of that you can use as a baseline for updating Erebaltor into something that sort of makes sense in 2023, I think it was, we did the Kickstarter. It's been a few years now. So yeah, that's a starting point. I mean, it started as a single article in a magazine, and then you have this series of scenarios or scenario packages called just Erebaltor 1, Erebaltor 2, Erebaltor 3. So one was Kandra, which was this classic city campaign or city setting, which actually Arkand, that was just released for Dragonbane, is just basically a play on the name Kandra.
All right, I have that over here somewhere.
It's a very different setting, but yeah. I mean, I think it's an Easter egg there in terms of the actual name. And then you had the marsh planets, like the marshlands, like a marshland setting. Mm-hmm. You had Svavelvinter, the Brimstone Sleep. And then in 1989, the sort of Eventuspiel, the publishing house, sort of got their ducks in a row, and they produced a big cohesive box with like four books and a big gorgeous map. And by artist Ann-Sofie Kvarnström, which is still, again, a point of reference for most Swedish gamers, and I think it's been a point of reference for us when we came back to the setting and knew that we needed to have a really epic map to sort of really underpin it. And we did quite a lot of fun stuff around that. And Emil, maybe you want to say something about the map and the artwork and how we sort of tie that together.
Yeah, we had a lot of discussions about what's from the map we have to kind of keep or do some kind of a version of to make all the players who played before feel that it's the same map but just updated to our version and not just a copy but inspired by it, like a yellow dragon on a pile of gold.
Right.
It was a classic part of the art on the old map, and we had to have that on our map too. So yeah, we wanted to have the same feeling on the artwork on the map.
Now, how'd you actually get a hold of the IP to be able to do Erebaltor?
Yeah, maybe I can maybe take that one. I mean, there's two things, right? We released a game, actually in 2019, called Kopparhavets Hjältar, Heroes of the Copper Sea, which has a lot of the same material as Erebaltor, a lot of the same content. It's got the Copper Sea region. It's got a lot of the same sort of setup. And that was on the basis of having the agreement of, you know, the authors from back in the day, Erik Granström, Anders Blixt, Leif Uhrén. And in the sense, that's still a core. I mean, we're standing on the shoulders of giants, right? We're building on what they did back in the 80s. And that's the basic setup. Now, at the time, we didn't have the the trademark era Baltor, and we were also, you know, thinking about how exactly where do we want to, how do we want to pitch this, where do we want to go, sort of with the story here, with the content. So then, when Free League got the Dragon Bay license, which is a massive deal in Sweden, they also got Era Baltor as part of the package of the portfolio.
Okay.
And they didn't have an interest in publishing Era Baltor for themselves, so they reached out and to us. Now, the Heroes of the Copper Sea were released with our publishing house, Elmgast. So we in Astrolab, we have a game studio. We're basically the creative team. So we are our own little team of four people. And it's published through Elmgast, who's published Cult, I think, is the most. And Sweden, they're very known for also classic, massive, fantasy role-playing game, Eon. And there's a cyberpunk game called Neotech. So they're our publishing house, basically. And they, through them, we were able to get the license for Era Baltor, which meant that we could put the proper name on it. It meant we could now had a very active and great game system to base it off as well. And it just meant that we could go back to what we'd done for the Heroes of the Copper Sea and reshape it for Dragonbane, expand it. And also, I think one important thing is we've changed slightly. We were always building very heavily on what Eric had written. But now with Dragonbane, and also with the understanding that there will be the Brimstone Sleep and that the Conflict Suite will be released as a set of scenarios for Dragonbane.
Oh, okay.
We wanted to make sure, again, that this is something that can be that Era Baltor supports, basically. So you'll be able to... The island where the Brimstone Sleep is set is on the map. So you can play there. The Trakorian Islands, which is like his iconic setting, is there on the map. It's quite an important part of the map. So we reshaped it again a little bit just to make sure that everything fitted together and that you can bring all these different classic campaigns into one space, basically. One world.
That sounds very well thought out. That's awesome. So some of the things you mentioned sound like some of the bigger challenges of taking this setting with this long storied history and bringing it to 2026 audiences and not just in Swedish but also in English. So are those the biggest things? Kind of like cleaning up that patchwork and maybe. Simplifying but staying true to the old stuff, were those the big things? Were there other challenges that you had? Good question. Or was it too much?
No. Emil, do you have any?
For me as an artist, I have always been inspired by Dragon Bay or Drakkar Demoner, the first role-playing game I played as a young teenager, or I was 11 when I started playing it. And so the art was, for me, it's been more inspiring to think back and being nostalgic. Yeah. But of course, it was quite nervous if people would like it still being kind of an old school art form, or like the art style that we kept the old style, old school style of it, and if people would like how I interpret the old style in my own way. Leon have to answer for the more of the world building parts, because he's more been doing that from the ground up.
Yeah, I'll get you in a second, Leon. I do want to say, I'm going to show the art here. I looked at what you sent over and what you've published on Instagram, and I saw that you worked in acrylic, so we talked about that earlier. So it definitely has some of that old school feel, but the lines are like so clean, so I can see it kind of bridging the gap between more modern stuff and still having kind of the big epic adventure setting. I just love the serpent in the ocean and the folks on the that look extremely dangerous. But it's really I've seen a lot of the art that's come out of Sweden from Free League and others. There's stuff I would love to have on my wall. So I'll send you my address later. If you want to just roll that up and shoot it over, that'd be great. But we'll talk about that later. Leon, so bringing Arabaltor to English audiences, what's been the biggest challenge so far for you?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I can say a little bit about both sort of the challenge of sort of updating it to 26 and bringing it to an English audience. I think that sort of connected but slightly different. And the first thing on bringing the setting up to date is exactly also what Emil was saying about the art also applies to the setting. I think actually the art and the setting goes very much hand in hand. And this is the beauty of having Emil, who lives and breathes Arabaltor in terms of the way the images speak, like they really convey the setting. And you know, I mean, I think only a fan could really do that. You know, so we're very lucky in that sense. It's what's fun with about this project. I don't think we would have done it without this creative challenge, you know, of really sort of going to, you know, what's great about the old Arabaltor really is the campaigns, especially the Queen of Suites. But there were others like there's the White Grimoire of Sirazia, there's the Nidland Purification. There's a bunch of really epic campaigns that people have played and played and replayed for 40 years. So there's a lot of expectation. Everyone's got their own interpretation of Arabaltor and what it is and how it speaks to them. So then trying to find a vision that it feels right for us, and we feel shows respect to the original material and to the fans. I think that's the challenge, and I think what really helped is that we worked very closely with Erik Nordström, with Anders Blixt. All of this is basically we got the trademark Arabaltor, but the real thing is having the agreement of the IP holders, the original authors, to reuse and build on their material. And that's what we've done with Eric and with Anders and Leif Urien. We wanted to do something more than that. So one of the things that Erik Rostrum does is in his writings, he relies heavily on, for instance, Mesopotamian, Sumeric mythology. So we built on that and really drew in more inspiration. All the gods, like one of the pantheons in a way, one of the main pantheons is the Sumeric gods. And a lot of the monstrosities would be drawn from there as well. You have ziggurats, you know, it's really... Okay. Quite a broad thing. And then the setting, you know, is also inspired by sort of Renaissance Europe, Renaissance mercantilism, the Renaissance Italy. There's all these really diverse historic inspirations. And rather than getting nerdy about it and sort of trying to make something that looks like a particular era of human history, because this is still Mathemaeum, this is still, you know, over-the-top fantasy. Mm-hmm. But there's so much fun inspiration to be had from history, from just going back to different eras, mashing it together, giving it a bit of an unexpected turn, and you end up with something that is, you know, fresh and exciting. And then you also have the reference frame of Arabaltor itself to play with. So it's trying to sort of navigate these different sources of inspiration and present something that's a new vision for Arabaltor, but still, you know, is respectful to both to the source material and to the and to the fans. I think that's been our main challenge, and that's also what's fun about this project. Now, for the internationals, for the English speakers out there, listen, I hope you'll all enjoy this. This is really like this is a big part for maybe I'm speaking for my own generation. This is really a big part of the soul, heart and soul of Swedish role playing on a platter. I mean, this is where people have been having their adventures and the scenarios for decades. And again, we try to build on that because one of the things, I mean, we call this like a world crawl. We want to sort of, we have gear the entire release to sort of open sandbox campaign play, where you can start your campaign, and you can start with the baseline Dragonbane campaign. So the Path of Glory, yeah. Mr. Vale. I mean, we've actually plotted within agreement with the Free League. We've plotted all of these localities on the map of Erebalter. So if you're already playing Dragonbane, you want to expand your horizons, you can just sort of head out on to the big gorgeous map that that we've put together and Emil has illustrated, and explore an entire world, we also want to make sure that you have we introduced something called a chronicle, which is basically this idea that you keep playing multiple campaigns, also scenarios and even like small encounters, but multiple campaigns with the same group. And you build like a longer narrative, and you'll have your recurring villains. We represent the Coppicey Chronicle, where you have one overarching meta theme, but then obviously each campaign has its own conflict. So this is something that people have been doing a lot at home in Sweden. I think there was a real sense of you have your classic group, and it's been going for ages, and it's been doing all the classic campaigns, and it creates its own story and its own narrative, and we want to really cater for that and encourage that. So I think that's also like a difference from just playing with playing the baseline Dragonbane, where it's more contained. So what we offer, because we want to offer something that is complementary to that, is really a broader canvas, the possibility of linking campaigns. We have support for long journeys, so you can take your ship and sail across the Copper Sea, or you can take a caravan across these continents, or you can take an air balloon, a zeppelin, and fly or drag it back. So we want to make it. We emphasize travel a bit more. We want to encourage people to, or their characters really, to go out and actually explore the world and travel through the world.
So you're introducing some more systems, some more rules to the game, like travel. Is there anything else that you've added to Dragonbane as part of this?
Yeah, we have travels. We have some quite basic but big scale battle rules. Okay. That's follow the same kind of rule system that we have for travels, and what we call you're doing a collected test. That's kind of how you travel, that you have a group that doing this kind of skill tests. And the result is based on how many of the successes you have, and we took that kind of a rule and made some simple large scale battle rules for that. Mm-hmm. And we have merchant rules, how you can actually buy stuff, and quite easy, not crunchy rules, but rules that supports a group who wants to use like the merchant kind of skills to travel the world and sell stuff and make their coins to buy a bigger ship to travel farther and more adventure, like an engine for adventure, just to take you to another city around the sea or something like that. So yeah, and what more?
I know some people asked about like strongholds and that kind of thing, like a home base.
Not yet. But we have in the sailing rules, the idea is that you have a ship, we have a boat, a vessel as a base for your play group.
Yeah, moving base.
That's cool. That's actually something like I saw in just the regular rules for Dragonbane. There's you actually have seafaring type skills, but there's no seafaring in the Misty Vale. So, yeah. so uh, yeah. I like that you're bringing that out, especially with a larger world.
Yeah, it's quite a useful skill in especially Copper C expansion. You should have at least one or two that master that skill.
Yeah, so can you tell me about the Copper C and what that whole campaign is about?
Yes, I mean, the Copper C isn't really a campaign. It's more of a region source book. Yeah, it's got this Copper C Chronicle, which is again, it's more like this sort of campaign frame than a campaign itself. So the books have two books. One is like a player book, and the idea there is really just to give players a way to anchor their characters in the setting. So you've got like background tables to you just sort of auto-generate your mementos and events from your upbringing. It's a very light touch. It's just like a couple of tables to roll on, but just give your character a bit more of a stake in the setting itself.
Okay.
And that also has actually the expanded sailing rules, because in particular for the Copper Sea, the idea is that you are sailing, and then you have all this inspiration from, you know, the Mediterranean of the 15th, 16th century. You know, you'll be hearing a lot of stuff that is basically just wholesale stolen from real world history. And that's what we do. I mean, this is the art of the reference, right? I mean, you take everything and you turn it around and it's not a minimalist setting. This is a setting where we try to find inspiration wherever we can and bring it together. The other book is the Copper Sea Chronicle. Yeah, the Copper Sea Chronicles. So that is this campaign frame, mm-hmm. Which means that you have an introductory adventure that sets the whole thing up. There are some handouts and some sort of meta story framework things that you can put in place. Then you have a lot of just adventure material, like adventure hooks, adventure sites. You have actors. You have a whole system with actors and how they like. There can be enemies. There can be allies. Powerful power brokers, basically, in the setting, and how they influence, how they interact with the player characters. And we have, I think, in total 5 scenarios.
Yeah, it's about one scenario per region that borders the sea. So you have, doesn't matter what kind of shores your player lands, there's a scenario for that part of the, that you can throw in there.
So it's really tailored for this kind of campaign play, an open campaign play and sailing around the Copper Sea. But with enough in there to just start playing written adventures straight away as well.
Okay.
It's a resource book for the GM.
So you have some scenarios in there, but they might just be dropping those scenarios as part of their own story. So they're using those to flesh it out.
The idea of the Chronicle is that you link the scenarios to the campaigns that are there. Some may be written for the Chronicle, some may just be freestanding, and there are ways to then link that into the broader narrative. Now, these are two of our three products, and the third product is then the Call of the Siren, which is much more like your classic. It also works very well with the whole Copper Sea Chronicle setup, but it's its own standalone dedicated campaign, which has been really well received in Sweden. So we're really happy, and we won awards when we released, I think, for best campaign in 2023 or 2024. It was well received. It was well received. We were very happy. And Jonas is a great, brilliant scenario author. So we were very keen to bring this whole setup to an international audience as well. It's very quirky. There's a lot of hidden sort of layers of intrigue in the scenario, and we get a lot of really great feedback from the groups that have been playing it. So that's the cherry on the cake.
so what is that? What's the plot? Can you give us the plot of that scenario?
How much can you say about it?
Without spoiling anything, it's just what might draw someone in.
You got the setup for the campaign is like presents you of a like a would you say an epic some epic story that you can start investigating and you got drawn into it and then it takes you all around the Copper Sea to different corners of the sea into adventure sites and cities and wilderness and chasing villains and other people and entities.
Yeah, I mean, there are nefarious villains, but all with their own motivations. Mm. And one of the things that we try to do is, I mean, you'll always see how the group approaches a certain, you know, NPC. I mean, sometimes, you know, we've had multiple examples of, you know, groups basically allying with the main baddie, and we want to have a lot of flexibility in the scenarios that you can play it in slightly different ways, and that's a big feature of Call of the Siren. You can really play out in different ways depending on how the group acts. You have sirens. You have that's not really a spoiler. You have an epic threat. It's very classic in the sense that you are. You know, you are there, out there, sort of to save the world. You're really facing an epic mythological threat to the Copper Sea region, basically. As Emil said, you have the opportunity then to travel to see all these different and very diverse and colorful sites. And then you have these plots and intrigues in the background. And it's very much, again, open sandbox play. Yeah. And a lot of sort of hidden quirky details that you realize when you play through it. And I think the player characters aren't going to get through this experience unchanged necessarily.
Okay. Well, so, go ahead.
I was self, when I read it myself the first time, the draft of it, or it was quite finished text-wise, but when I was doing the illustration for it, for the first publishing of it that we did for the old role-playing game called Copper of Sieltar, that is quite the same world, but not in the Dragonbane franchise. Mm, okay. And what struck me was that Jonas had put in so much stuff in just one book, and it was like, how can it be so much stuff I can play in one book? You know, like a page could contain hours of gaming. And that's I think is the beauty of that book. It's written so well that you can play it for many hours if you want to. You can take all these kind of leads and make a larger sandbox of it easily if you want to.
Yeah, so you could just play what's there and have, you know, a certain length, but you could really stretch. There's enough in there that you could stretch it out for.
It's like when you play these computer games like Witcher or whatever, mm-hmm. where you go around and you can follow the main path, but you can also do all these side quests forever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, very, very literally. Like I want to say this is always difficult because I don't want to spoil the campaign, right? But there's one scenario where you're in a particular part of the world. It's an epic scenario in its own right. You're traveling up and down a river. You're looking for a specific entity, and you're dealing with all these goblins and you know, different factions. But then there's just like a short section on something that happens in a nearby city, which is the ruined capital of the old Jorpagnic Empire. And we spend, I think, 10, 12 sessions just ruin trekking that capital. I think the player characters ended up slaying a dragon, you know. I mean, it spirals. You can easily spiral, I don't want to say out of control, but, you know, into, right. into deep adventure.
So, for folks that are maybe new to Dragonbane and you know have only done what's in the core set, what do you think are the biggest draws to to the Arab altar setting and the these additional books that you're including part of this Kickstarter. What do you think they're going to find in there that will really enhance their Dragonbane experience?
I think it's going to be like you have much more of this, more world, more gods, yeah, more culture, and diverse culture, not just typical what you could expect of fantasy culture, but cultures that in a fantasy setting, but with some quirky differences, but at the same time, stuff you recognize from our real history, but combined with fantasy takes on it. What would you say, Leon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've worked on quite a lot. I mean, as I described, we've had all these sort of different ranges of different sources of inspiration, but we want to make sure that this is easily presented in a very straightforward way and applied. I mean, we like setting, we like applied setting, stuff that you'll actually use at the table. Mm-hmm. Plot hooks, conflicts, secrets, things that are likely to sort of trigger, something that leads to interesting play. So that's true of the game, Call of the Siren, and I think it's true of all the setting material that we have. It's we don't do textbooks, right? Nothing is there just for general awareness. Everything's there because we think it can be played, or it can help enhance, the play experience around the table. That's the idea. I think for players who are already playing Dragonbane, maybe playing one of the campaigns, I think it just opens up a world, right? I mean, it's on a different scale. And then again, we have the short journey rules in Dragonbane. We have long journey rules. Basically, we want to encourage people to pull up this beautiful massive map and feel like this is my fantasy world for exploring. This is a larger canvas, and I can just head out, and there's so much more stuff out there. And that's also, I think, part of the design goal, that we don't necessarily describe exactly everything and try to sort of define what's where. A lot of what we describe are pinpricks, are hooks, or specific things that you can stumble across, or that you can throw into your ongoing game, and they regenerate again an adventure or an encounter or something that you can play with. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a slight step up is the wrong word, but it's a toolbox for slightly more ambitious campaigns, maybe. So yeah. I mean, it's if you start with Dragonbane and then you feel like I want to do something more, I think Arab Altar sort of offers them more.
So you talked about, it sounds like there's a lot of things for players to help them build their background, like with the Misty Veil. There's really, you've got Eladain and Sathmog, and there's really not, there aren't really any, deities or cultures to speak of, unless you just kind of make it up in your head. So, but you've outlaid some of the religions and cultures of Arab Altar in this.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there. I mean, we try to present it in such a way that you use it. Either you use it because you have a god and you have a sect that has an agenda that you can use in play, as from the GM side, or if you're a player, you look in the player book for the Coppicey, for instance, and you'll have like a couple of capsules about what gods are worshipped in your region, and then maybe you roll something on the random table and it's like, oh well, I have a sun amulet because I'm from the kingdom of Zarakia, and we worship the sun god Utu, we try to sort of bring it in both through the players and through the GM, because at the end of the day, the only way that the setting material is actually going to breathe and live at the table is if people use it in play. So that's our goal, basically. Okay. But yeah, there's a lot. I mean, this is what it's all about, right? I mean, this is a setting release. It's very much focused on culture, religion, politics, conflict.
Yeah, I think a lot of players, you know, outside of the dungeon crawl, like some of that getting to the cultures and politics of different regions and the conflicts that those create. So that's pretty good. Are there other? Have you done any changes to the existing kin for Dragonbane or added any kin? To an Air Baltor?
I mean, we've added a few kin. One fun thing is, mallards are massive in Air Baltor. I mean, for us, it's the spiritual home of mallards, and we've got some really unpleasant mallard characters, actually, beautifully drawn by Emil, which you'll see when the Kickstarter launches. You got the pirate mallards of Morilvedin. I mean, they're the terror of the sea. So one of the big things we've done, you know, minotaurs are monsters in Core Dragonbane, but in Air Baltor, they're akin. So you can 100% play a minotaur. You have Rutkin, you have a Saurian, sort of like lizard people.
Okay.
Slightly different take from the one that you have in the monster book for Dragonbane. And you have Kentaurs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Centaurs, great.
Centaurs, yeah.
Yeah.
And did I miss
one? I think it's the kin we added. And then we have a spin on the elves with the soul, the missing soul of Mother Nature have been lost for centuries. And for them not to die, they have to leech on someone else. A soul, so they have this soul bound to mostly to animals, because that makes them mobile. So they often have the spirit animal with them, like a bird or a dog or
that's interesting,
reindeer or something like that.
So that, does that make them more vulnerable to if something were to target their spirit animal?
Yeah, of course it's kind of they have to take care of it, because if the spirit animal dies, they could lose some like
willpower or something.
Yeah, and they start to slowly die until they find another spirit animal to leech on.
So I was pretty surprised to see that Free League throw Arkand in there, throw the Misty Veil in there, how'd that come about? You working with or I guess convincing or getting Free League to agree to include their locations in your maps and whatnot.
No, listen. I think they. I can't remember if we asked them or they asked us. But I mean, it was pretty straightforward.
I think they asked us, "Have you thought about it?" And we said, "Yeah, we have thought about it." And they said, "We think you should do it if you think it works with your." We're not saying you have to, but if you think it's okay.
That's actually really nice. That's pretty cool.
I mean, obviously, I mean, it doesn't mean that these locations are in a way officially set in Air Baltor, not at all. It just means that if you are playing those campaigns, you can completely end canon continue in Air Baltor. You can link it. So it's more like a service to those groups.
Yes.
So that's really cool. I swear, I just every conversation I have with them is great. That they seem like such nice folks. So I'm not surprised at all, but that's great that they, I think with Dragonbane, Drakdamoner, it's really seems to be such a touchstone for gamers that grew up in Sweden. So Emil talked about, Emil, you started when you were 11. Leon, when did you start gaming?
I mean, I think my first memory was when I was like six or something. You know, my cousin was GMing Dragonbane, Drakkar Demona. But I'm not sure I was actually properly playing until probably 10 or 11, like Emil. So yeah, I've been doing it for a while.
Now, are either of you the permanent GM, or do you both play and run games?
Both.
I think we're both permanent GMs. I think.
Permanent GMs in some groups, especially when I do the Dragonbane and Erebaltor stuff, okay, with a couple of groups, and then I'm actually a player in another group. But mostly, I do the Erebaltor with that group, but rest of the games we play, another guy is okay, the forever GM.
So, how would you start with Leon? Leon, how would you describe your GMing style? Are you a nice GM, or are you?
I'm way too nice. I'm a bit of a soft touch. We had a character death a couple of sessions ago, but that was the first one in a fairly long campaign. So I'm not. And Dragonbane is a pretty unforgiving rule system, but I try to stick by the rules. But I'm probably be a bit stricter.
Emil, how about you?
I'm kind of nice when it comes to giving them like tips and hints about, have you thought about the conflict you have before, or have you have you remember your goal, and giving them reminders all the time? It's like, why are you here? Like clues, maybe, but not. but when it comes to them doing stupid stuff, maybe I give them a clue about this is dangerous, but if they proceed, okay, let the dice rule.
Yeah, I'm definitely nice in some ways, where I'm probably a little generous with magic and heroic abilities, but when it comes to the dice, I am I like when things go sour.
Well, yeah, the dice fall where they fall. That's good policy. Yeah.
So with this I just want to get to know you guys a little bit better. That tells me a little bit about you. So, Emil, let's talk about your art. And you mentioned earlier that you're really drawing on the past for inspiration. What are your favorite pieces that you've done for Erebaltor? And can you talk about how you came up with them?
My favorite pieces. I have some, and they are quite favorite in different because of different circumstances. And it's like, I have a dwarf on horse, and that's a favorite one of mine because it was the first picture that Mons and Leon asked if they could borrow to the Copper of a Celta role playing game, and there was the illustration that actually took me into this business, and it was actually drawn for Forbidden Lands. A friend of mine's character was a dwarf on a horse with a bow, and he wanted a picture of it, so I drew it, but it ended up in Erebaltor instead. Oh. Eventually.
It's a great picture.
Yeah, and then I have this king with his court mallards. We call them jesters with that poison him in it with
debauched jesters.
Yeah. So they put distract him. Two of them distracting, and the third one pouring poison in his wine.
Oh, okay.
And that's kind of a close to the heart favorite. One thing is, was really nice to draw, and I'm really happy with the outcome and the result, but it's also the guy in the picture is a portrait of Måns Broman, one of the author's best friend, and he passed away a couple of years ago. Nice. So it's close to the heart, that picture. Yeah.
That's nice. You can do that.
Sentimental.
Yeah.
So it's his name was Björn. So it's a tribute to Björn. And it was a character that he invented. So that's why he had to be the guy on the picture.
That's you know, anything with a personal touch like that is going to be. That's really fabulous.
And then, of course, the two new covers, the paintings for the covers for the setting and cop out.
I kept telling Emil that he should do some sort of real time broadcast of him painting it, because it's been amazing in the group. He's watching him doing it's oil on board, right?
Yeah. Acrylic
on board, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, the way they sort of develop over time, really, really old school. And they're beautiful. I mean, you've seen them, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I went to the Instagram instead of, I'm so used to everybody doing everything digital now. So it was just really cool to see someone kind of going old school with acrylics on the board. Yeah, I think art does a fantastic job to draw people in, especially with kind of art and creativity a little bit under attack these days, it feels like sometimes. So it was really impressive. And I've kind of been talking about it on my social media a little bit already and getting some great feedback. So I think Amelia should be really proud of what you're doing for this. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this. I've been snatching up everything I can this Dragonbane. I know on Reddit some other people had questions about are there any follow-ons after what are you going to do in other regions after the Copper Sea? Do you have that in the works already, or are stretch goals for the Kickstarter maybe?
We have a couple of regions in development. Actually, so we have everybody is working on their own projects right now. There are follow-ups, and then time will tell who is most mature when we should focus on one of them. Okay. But we have a plan on the order of releases, but we'll see. So we don't spoil anything and say.
All right.
But there are a couple or more ongoing.
I think we can say that as a rule, what we try to do, which is a bit what you see in the Copper Sea as well, is we will have like a bit of a region or a sub-region and a campaign. So. Mm. Our priority after this release is to get more playable material out, basically. This is our ethos. We want to get stuff out that people can play, right? And it's not necessarily that would be other regions in the Copper Sea. We would also be looking at regions within the Copper Sea, so you do a bit more of a deep dive.
As far as other parts of the Kickstarter, are you going to have any other... Like collector's edition covers or like, I don't know why you wouldn't just with the drawn covers, but I know people are asking about collector's edition or any other kind of add-ons. I know Dragonbane, they've been doing these cloth maps, which I really like, but have you got any other things planned for the Kickstarter as add-ons?
Yeah, we have some surprises and stuff that people have asked for and stuff like that. Mm. So yes, I think most of the people will be happy with some of the stretch goals. Yes.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. So great. I appreciate you coming on and spending your late night with me. I know it's after midnight there, so I appreciate it. Any final thoughts from either one of you or both?
I hope you international audience will enjoy the Swedish tradition of playing in Erbaltor.
Yeah, and I think you've heard that there's a lot of people around here. There's a lot of different groups who have made this possible. Back, you know, the authors, the Free League, all our backers. It's really a community project. So I hope you'll join the community.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you do too. And if you haven't tried Dragonbane yet, we've got lots of stuff. If you want to get a feel for it, we're a little silly, but it's such an amazing game. I can see why it became like a household, or Drakkar Demoner became a household name. So, all right, thanks everybody, and Kickstarter is launching soon. All the details, links to the art, to the Kickstarter, everything else is in the comments, and we'll see you soon.
18th of June.
Okay. I hope to have this out before then.